भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमम् देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासम् ततो जयमुदीरयेत् नष्टप्रायेषु अभद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया भगवति उत्तमश्लोके भक्तिर्भवति नैष्ठिकी कृष्णे स्वधामोपगते धर्मज्ञानादिभिः सह कलौ नष्टदृशामेश पुराणार्कोऽधुनोदितः ग्रन्थराज श्रीमद्भागवतम् कैंटो 9 चैप्टर 8 entitled The Sons of Sagar Meet Lord Kapiladev. And today is text 24, so we can repeat these. Prashanta Maya Guna Karma Lingam Anama Rupam Sat Asat Vimuktam Jnana Upadeshaya Grihita Deham Namamahe Tvam Purusham Puranam Prashanta Maya Guna Karma Lingam Anam Rupam Sarasad Vimuktam Jnanopadeshaya Grihita Deham Namamahe Tvam Purusham Puranam Prashanta Maya Guna Karma Lingam Anam Rupam Sarasad Vimuktam Jnanopadeshaya Grihita Deham Namamahe Tvam Purusham Puranam Prashanta Maya Guna Karma Lingam Anam Rupam Sarasad Vimuktam Jnanopadeshaya Grihita Deham Namamahe Tvam Purusham Puranam Ladies. Prashanta, O completely peaceful one, Mayaguna, the modes of material nature, Karmalingam, symptomized by fruitive activities, Anamarupam, one who has no material name or form, Sad Asad Vimuktam, transcendental to the manifested and non-manifested modes of material nature. Jnana Upadeshaya, for distributing transcendental knowledge, as in Bhagavad Gita. Grihita Deham, has assumed a form like a material body. Namamahe, I offer my respectful obeisances. Twam, unto you. Purusham, the Supreme Person. Puranam, the original. Translation. O completely peaceful Lord, although material nature, fruitive activities, and their consequent material names and forms are your creation, you are unaffected by them. Therefore, your transcendental name is different from material names, and your form is different from material forms. You assume a form resembling a material body just to give us instructions like those of Bhagavad Gita, but actually you are the supreme original person. I therefore offer my respectful obeisances unto you. Please repeat. O completely peaceful Lord, although material nature, fruitive activities, and their consequent material names and forms are your creation, you are unaffected by them. Therefore, your transcendental name is different from material names, and your form is different from material forms. You assume a form resembling a material body just to give us instructions like those of Bhagavad Gita. But actually you are the supreme original person. I therefore offer my respectful obeisances unto you. Purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Srila Yamunacharya has recited this verse in his Stotra Ratna, text 43. Bhavantam evanucharan nirantaraha prashanta nishesha manorathantaraha kadaham ekantika nitya kinkaraha Praharsha Yashyami Sanata Jivitam. By serving you constantly, one is freed from all material desires and is completely pacified. When shall I engage in your permanent eternal as your permanent eternal servant and always feel joyful to have such a fitting master? Manoratenasiti dhavato bahihi. One who acts on the mental platform must descend to material activities. Material contamination, however, is completely absent from the Supreme Personality of Godhead and His pure devotee. Therefore, the Lord is addressed as Prashanta, completely peaceful, free from the disturbances of material existence. The Supreme Lord has no material name or form. Only the foolish think that the Lord's name and form are material. Avajananti mam murha manushim tanum ashritam. The identity of the Supreme Lord is that He is the original person. Nonetheless, those who have but a poor fund of knowledge think that the Lord is formless. The Lord is formless in the material sense, but He has His transcendental form. Satchit Ananda Vigraha. Om Ajnana Timirantasya Jnananjana Shilakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamahyam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guroho Shri Yutapadakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sakrajatam Sahagana Raghunatham Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhan Vitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindho Dinabandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhupya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Nama Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Prashanta Maya Gunakarna Malingam Anama Rupam Sat Asat Vimuktam Gyanopadeshaya Grihita Deham Namame Hetvam Purusham Puranam. O completely peaceful Lord, although material nature, fruit of activities, and their consequent material names and forms are your creation, you are unaffected by them. Therefore, your transcendental name is different from material names, and your form is different from material forms. You assume a form resembling a material body just to give us instructions like those of Bhagavad Gita, but actually you are the supreme original person. I therefore offer my respectful obeisances unto you. Maharaj Anshuman is praying to the Supreme Personality of Godhead in his form as Kapila Dev, Kapiladeva, of course, has incarnated in this particular form to speak knowledge, especially the knowledge of Sankhya. Knowledge of Sankhya is the beginning of one's extrication from the material world. Vedic literatures are understood in six traditional schools. Who knows what they are? Sankhya Yoga, Nyaya Vaisheshika, Mimamsa. Yeah. They actually go like this. Mimamsa, there are two Mimamsas. There's Purva Mimamsa and Uttara Mimamsa. Purva Mimamsa means the Karmakanda school, the school of learning how to be a civilized human being and fulfilling your material desires in this world by elevating yourself in terms of better karma, becoming pious. That's Purva Mimamsa. When you graduate from that school, then you have Uttara Mimamsa. And Uttara Mimamsa is better known as Vedanta. Vedanta means you understand what the real meaning of all the Vedas is. In particular, what are the Upanishads meant to effect? It's not just for the purpose of pious elevation in this world that all these Vedas are spoken. It's actually for the purpose of purifying our hearts and coming to the stage of recognizing our eternal spiritual nature, what we are, in fact. So that's called Vedanta. But the two of them are both Mimamsas. Mimamsa means to discriminate very carefully or to analyze and interpret the Vedic literatures. So one of them interprets what should we be doing, and the other one interprets what should we be realizing from that. This is Mimamsa and Vedanta. The other schools are not so much relevant, particularly Nyaya Vaisheshika. This was given originally by Gautama Rishi, Nyaya. Later on, Kanada Rishi fortified this or elaborated on it in terms of Vaisheshika philosophy. Logic and atomism, atomic theory, you might say. That's Vaisheshika. And then you've got Sankhya and Yoga. Now these six schools, they're actually paired into three pairs. So you've got the two Mimamsas, and you've got Nyaya Vaisheshika, and here you've got Sankhya and Yoga. Sankhya is the theory, the philosophy behind yoga. Yoga is the application of that theory. So it's impossible to practice yoga in the modern world without understanding what it's actually meant to do. Just as it's impossible, not impossible, but it's foolish to remain satisfied with Purva Mimamsa or Karma Mimamsa without understanding what it's ultimately meant to do. So Kapiladeva therefore came, although he's Krishna himself, the same Krishna who is the goal of Vedanta, or rather the goal of Bhakti Vedanta, the same Krishna came in this form. This is indicated here by the word Grihita Deham. Grihita means he's accepted it, or he's taking it on. It doesn't mean that he takes a material body, but he assumes that form, Gyanopadeshaya, in order to give this knowledge, jnana. We know Bhagavad Gita is largely consisting of jnana, transcendental knowledge. And in fact, one of the chapters of Bhagavad Gita is entitled Sankhya Yoga. Which chapter is that? Chapter 6. So Sankhya is not a separate interest from Bhakti Yoga. Actually, none of the six darshans are separate from Bhakti Yoga, but when people themselves separate those processes from Bhakti Yoga, then they're considered to be separate. So, what is the relevance of the Sankhya philosophy for which Kapila Dev accepted this particular form of transcendence, Jnana Upadeshaya, in order to give instructions on Jnana. What kind of Jnana? Srila Prabhupada has clarified that just so that there's no mistake in his synonyms, and again in the translation, and then again in the purport. He's come to give us knowledge such as we find in the Bhagavad Gita. In other words, he's come to explain Sankhya. So what is this Sankhya? Sankhya philosophy, actually, there are two Sankhyas. There's one by the original Sankhya philosophy by Kapila Muni, and then there's the Sankhya, perverted Sankhya philosophy, which was later given by others, Ishwara Krishna and other philosophers. They kind of hijacked his Sankhya program and utilized it to their own separate ends so that they don't have to recognize bhakti. That's we've mentioned already. So, Sankhya means jnana, and jnana means awareness, and particularly awareness of your spiritual nature. We have to understand the nature of spirit before we can identify with it. We have to have any concept of what is spirit. Therefore, we find these lines here in the first couple of lines of the verse. Maya guna karnamalingam anamarupam sad asad vimuktam. Especially the second line. Anamarupam. We, like the Supreme Lord, have no name. We have no form in this material world. People don't know who they are in this world. We bumble through life trying to figure out who we are. And we get, for some time only, a temporary sense of identity. And we feel either comfortable or uncomfortable with that identity. Until the karma changes. When the karma changes, the ego also changes. And we go on, life after life, chasing after an illusory identity that actually doesn't exist because we are anamarupam. And we are part and parcel of the Supreme, who is in the same way, anamarupam. He has no material identity in this world. But that doesn't mean that we have no name, in an absolute sense, ontologically speaking. And it doesn't mean we have no form. It doesn't mean that the Supreme Personality of God is impersonal in the same way. So, sat asat vimuktam means that the spirit is essentially different from matter, liberated from both those things that are considered virtuous in this world or those things that are considered temporary or sinful in this world. There are different ways we can interpret sat asat vimuktam. Here Prabhupada has taken it as transcendental to the manifested and non-manifested modes of material nature. I didn't even mention that one. So, the manifest modes and the unmanifest modes. What are the unmanifested modes of nature? Pradhan. And then you've got the manifest modes of nature. Because actually everything comes out of these modes of material nature. That's the significance of the term Maya Guna Karnamalingam, which Prabhupada translates it as material nature, fruit of activities, and their consequent material names and forms. When we are influenced by, well, first of all, when we ourselves make the wrong choice on account of our minute independence to turn away from Krishna, we double-click on our false ego, and it's minimized, and then we fill the desktop with so many other conceptions, one after another. Ever-changing set of conceptions that we carry along with us. Bhagavad Gita says, just as the air carries aromas. As so many aromas are wafting through the air, so when a particular mode comes our way, then we get swayed by that, and we begin to identify with that, and we act impelled by that, and we get a body based on what we've done. So, therefore, Prabhupada says the material nature, fruit of activities, and their consequent material names and forms. These things are all created by Krishna. But Krishna is above these things. He's distinct from these things, and so are we. The second line of this verse applies just as well to the living entity as it does to the Supreme Lord, because we're nothing but his parts and parcels. We are also Satchit Ananda Vigraha, but minute, very, very small, like a drop of water compared to the whole ocean. So the Sankhya project is to recognize, first of all, that we are that same Purusha, albeit in small degree, and then to extricate our sense of identity from this material world. And Sankhya philosophy does this by categorizing just what this material world is. So how many categories are given in the Sankhya philosophy? Who knows? 24. What are those? That's 13. Didn't you mention those already? Oh, you mentioned the senses, right? Okay. If we don't know these things, then how are we going to apply it? Who knows the answer to this? You've got... You've got the Panch Mahabhutas. You've got the five senses, right? The working senses. You've got the Gyanendriyas as well, the knowledge acquiring senses. That's 15. You've got these mind intelligence... ego, that's 18, and Jyotikarma Prabhu, the Tanmatras as well, five of those. So that brings us up to speed. And then you've got the final element, which is the soul, Purusha, the self. He's described here, Purusham Puranam, we're ancient, primeval. So, we talk about in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna talks in chapter 13 in particular. He talks about the kshetra, the field of activities. And these things make up our field of activities, at least in part. And we are distinct from that field of activities, but we are invested within it to such a degree that we become entangled through karma. So maya guna karma lingam means that just as the Supreme Lord has created these things, similarly we become overwhelmed by these things. Because we're small, he's great. That's the difference. But the Sankhya project looks at all these 24 categories and considers, am I this? No. So neti, not this. Am I that? No. So not that one either. Neti. Neti, 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 neti. This is the project of the Sankhya philosopher. And this jnana is actually important. Why? Why do we need to understand that we're not the material body? And I mean, I think you can see how Sankhya philosophy might help us to do that, at least theoretically, by allowing us at least the intelligence. What does intelligence mean? The ability to see things in their proper perspective, to understand what is what and who is who. If we have enough intelligence, enough knowledge, that we know what are these 24 categories, then in any circumstance when we become overwhelmed by desire, or when we become impelled to act upon our desires, then at least we can, if we are a little bit sattvic, we can stop and reason about what is our condition and what we should be doing. That's why it's important to be sattvic, and that's why the Purva Mimamsa project, that is to say preliminary Vedanta, you might say, is to become sattvic, to become a civilized, educated, well-balanced, normal human being, to become pious, in effect. Therefore, just as Vedanta Sutra begins, Atato Brahma Jignasa, the Dharma Sutras begin, Atato Dharma Jignasa. They're both important. Without Sadachar, which is the fruit of Mimamsa, the fruit of the Karma Mimamsa study, then you cannot really have any spiritual realization. Traditionally, for Vedanta study, it was considered prerequisite to have assimilated this topic. You Sadachar, it's also called Shishtachar, the behavior of a civilized, normal, well-adjusted human being concerned with advancement in life, Shreyas, rather than Preyas. So, whether you go through, and then the practice is of yoga, Hatha Yoga in particular. That's like the applied form of Sankhya principles. So those two also go together. But it's a mechanical process. And because nobody in Kali Yuga has enough piety or even understanding of what piety means, nobody's ever heard of Purva Mimamsa, and nobody has assimilated fully Sadachar, and nobody knows anything about Sankhya, and nobody really cares about Sankhya either, and many people don't even have the intelligence to understand these things. What to speak of the discipline that yoga requires? Yama, niyama, ityadi. We have eight ashtanga yoga, eight limbs of yoga. Therefore, the default method for the rest of us, all of us, is simply what? Mercy. Mercy cases. We have only to call out as sincerely as we can for help. In the form of this Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Nama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. The Sankshipta, or summarized version of Sankhya philosophy, which Krishna gives in Bhagavad Gita, and its elaborated form in the Srimad Bhagavatam by Kapila Dev, that's expected to at least give us some sense of where we stand and what we should be doing. But in fact, whatever we can gain in this age, at least for most of us, it's going to only be humbling ourselves before the holy name of the Lord and bowing down, as Maharaj Angshuman is doing in this verse. I recognize that you are the original primeval person of whom I am a part and parcel. You're the real thing, and I'm your category. You know, it's a theocentric worldview rather than an anthrocentric worldview. So, namamahe, this is the spirit. And Srila Prabhupada says here, just so that we don't make any mistake about it, your transcendental name is different from material nature. This is the thing we have. This is the main challenge that we have. Now that we've decided we don't have the adhikar for either karma or gyan or sankhya or yoga, for that matter. And nyaya vaisheshikas, we employ logic as well in understanding the scriptures. Krishna says that also in chapter 13. But logic alone is only going to get us within the realm of logic, and we're trying to get out of the realm of logic here. Sada sad vimuktam. So, now that we've decided that we have to call out for mercy in the form of the holy name, the main problem that we have as human beings in this short window of opportunity that we have while we are human beings, because we don't know what we're going to be next, after all. The main challenge for us now is to understand that this holy name is not an ordinary sound vibration. It's something from beyond our experience. It's something beyond our conception, at least at this point. To some degree, that's where we act on faith. But when we do that, then we gradually begin to enter into the realm of the holy name by His grace. Swayameva spurati adaha. the Narad Muni tells us, that when we engage our senses in devotional service, when we bow down with the humble spirit that Angshuman Maharaja is demonstrating in today's verse, and when we chant the holy name as sincerely as we can, under the guidance, submitting to the guidance of a sponsor for our soul, in the form of the spiritual master, bona fide spiritual master, then we can begin to get some insights by Krishna's divine grace. And that's our only hope. In this Kali Yuga, this is the process. So therefore, it's just a question of how we're going to chant. That's our challenge. We need to chant with Sambandhagyan. And all the things that we've been discussing so far, that is what comprises Sambandhagyan. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur has described in his writings that why do we commit offenses to the holy name of Krishna? Who knows? What is it that is the cause of our offensive mentality? Ignorance. Ignorance means the lack of knowledge of your relationship with the Supreme Lord, or your lack of knowledge of the relationship of the Supreme Lord's energies. Either way, sambandha means relationships. So, you know, I've mentioned before that we go through life and prioritize so many important things. We do our homework. If you're going to buy a house, you have to check it out very carefully. If you're going to even buy a car, you want to check out what do the stats say about that? What are the reviews? If you want to marry someone, you have to look into that person's astrological chart. If you want to make any important decision, you want to apply to a graduate school, you have to check and see who's teaching there and what are they known for. And any important decision, we put so much training into, we put so much preparation into. But when it comes to relationships, what's our training? We don't really have anything for that. It actually does exist, but it's not an empiric process. The traditional mode of preparing one for relationships is that you follow the model that's already being exemplified by your own predecessors. It's a preset, pre-existing paradigm. You don't have to speculate about anything. You don't have to go to school to figure it out. It's whatever has been given by great sages and authorities. You simply follow that. And this is something that Krishna has also said in Bhagavad Gita, in chapter 3, he says, Purvaihi Purvakritam, whatever the predecessors have done, you simply follow that. Kuru Karamaiva Tasmat Tvam, this chapter 4, text 15. And it's the same idea as echoed by others. That brings us back to the realm of Shishtachara. But the point here is that if we have an understanding of our relationship with the Lord, if we have an understanding of how to relate with the Lord's parts and parcels, if we have an understanding of how to relate to the Lord's energies, then we can become freed from our ignorance. That is the Sankhya program. And when we become freed from our ignorance, then we can fix our mind in meditation. That's the yoga program. Dhyana avastitatat gatena manasa paschantiyam yogino. And when we're fixed in meditation beyond ignorance, sada sad vimuktam, then we can realize what is this anamarupam, this purusham puranam, the person who is maya guna karma lingam. He is characterized by these energies, but he's beyond them. And at that point, we can sincerely adopt the same path that Angshuman Maharaj is recommending here, which is, at least by his example, he's recommending, Namamahe. I bow down. Does anybody know what Namami means, or Namaste? Na-ma-te. Sanatan Goswami describes this in his commentary on the Damodarashtakam from Padma Purana, because Damodarashtakam begins with what word? Namami. So he says it means Nama. Mami stands for false ego. I'm not approaching you with any false ego. I'm putting aside my ego and humbling myself in front of you. This is Namami. In a word, I offer my respectful obeisances. That's Prabhupada has translated it here. And he's addressing the Lord as Prashanta, maybe just to give us a hint of what is the Lord's character. Why he's Prashanta? Because he's all these other things as well. So this is the holy name of Krishna. Prabhupada's translation kind of hints that, since we're concerned about Krishna's holy name. And in this Kali Yuga, the holy name is the way that we approach the Lord. So this tells us, these are a few things we can think about. To chant offenselessly the holy name of Krishna is our immediate goal. We want to effect that if we can before we die again. Because, as we mentioned already, we don't know what the next body will be. So to that extent, it's necessary for us to become civilized. And when we're civilized, we can become free from ignorance. When we're free from ignorance, then we can begin to understand these things. In terms of our samskar, not in terms of surface-level intelligence or immediate emotional acceptance, but rather a real change in heart inside. That comes after some time in most cases, unless we get really special mercy. But again, it's all about mercy, and therefore he's bowing down as a matter of teaching us, because yad yad acharati shreshtas tattare veta rojanaha. Now, Angshuman Maharaj, he's the son of Sagar Maharaj. Sagar Maharaj had a very exalted spiritual master whose name was? We've read about him previously in this chapter. Arva Muni. And it's another interesting thing about this passage is that this is a long, multi-generational project to bring the Ganga to this world. So many difficulties they had to undergo. So a sense of context is also helpful. We have on our heads the mandate to make everyone in this world Krishna conscious. That is a very, very long-term project. Don't hold your breath if you're thinking that everyone in the world is going to become Krishna conscious in your lifetime. Well, you know, it's actually possible to do quite a lot in one lifetime. Within the realm of 10 or 12 years, look what Srila Prabhupada did. If we become as focused as he was, then we can approach his level of accomplishment. But it's pretty amazing what Srila Prabhupada did, given all the odds working against him. But it's based on his chanting of the holy name, and everything that we do as well will be based on our chanting of the holy name. But anyway, Angshuman Maharaj was a great, great personality, very, very powerful. It's described that he reformed so many sinful classes, you know, different groups of people in the world, different civilizations. He was able to reform them and bring them up to the standard of Shishtachara, because that's one thing that his guru was emphasizing. We all know different gurus emphasize different things in Krishna consciousness. So that was Arva Muni's forte. And Maharaj Angshuman, being the son of Sagar Maharaj, who is Arva Muni's disciple, he inherited that not only from his family line, but we can assume from his spiritual line of descent as well. So he was able to do a lot to elevate people in this world. And, you know, this, we'll see what happens as this story goes on. Here at this point, after having seen one generation burnt to ashes because they offended Kapiladev, Maharaj Angshuman was intelligently offering prayers. And we'll see what happens. He gets mercy from Kapiladev. He gets the horse that predecessors also wanted, but he gets more than that, it would seem. At least in terms of his prayers, we can appreciate that he's already gotten so much mercy, we can pray in a like manner. For the purity, for the freedom from ignorance, and for the realization to actually do what's necessary to help people in this world in the same way, by distributing books, by distributing prasadam, by distributing the holy name. All three of these things are going on with great enthusiasm here in New Dwarka. Therefore, it's a glorious effort. It's always nice to visit New Dwarka and see this place. Giriraj Swami, I know he said that you can feel Prabhupada's presence here. It's one of those places, Vaikuntha Embassy. And So these things are, of course, going on here in full swing. So that's a great thing. I'm going to stop here, but if anybody has any questions or comments, we can discuss. Yeah, you have a microphone, somebody.
Thank you very much, Prabhu. Can you hear?
Yeah.
So you mentioned that when we become civilized, we can become free from ignorance. And so I guess that's something that I'm dealing with. And I was just wondering if you could elaborate on, I guess, like sense control and how it's related to concentration. Controlling, being kind of driven by the sense objects, and then even when the sense objects are not present at the moment, but then right now, sitting in class, just because you haven't practiced sense control, it's hard for you to really concentrate when it's time to concentrate. Is that something that?
Maybe you can rephrase your question, because I'm seeing a few questions here.
Well, I guess could you just kind of elaborate or give the importance on the relation between sense control and just concentration and in general?
Okay. Well, to control our senses, we have so many rules and regulations, and that's just a matter of obedience. You need to exercise no discrimination whatsoever. It's a toggle switch. I obey or I disobey. That's called danda. It's the last resort when you find that someone is not really willing to cooperate. And it's the first resort with regards to any of the Vedic processes when the mind is highly contaminated. When we're dealing with a contaminated mind, you do not reason with it. You do not cajole it, you don't flatter it, you don't bribe or you don't treat it in any way except immediate violence. You beat the mind. You beat it to death. That's called yama niyama. And the way that you do this is by following certain regulative principles. When we do that, then the mind becomes less agitated. The mind right now, it's hard to explain the mind with any better comparison than a monkey. The problem is that in America, we don't really have such deep insights into what a monkey is because we don't have monkeys. When you live in Vrindavan, you understand exactly what it means to be a monkey. It's just constant agitation, constant mischief, one sannyasi once gave a class when I was on Radha Damodar, this is many years ago. He said, go stand in the mirror and stick out your tongue in front of the mirror and just watch that tongue very carefully and see if you can keep it still. Your tongue will constantly be agitating in one way or another. The tongue actually never sits still, or it's very rare at least. So the mind is a little bit like that, and you have to just beat it into submission. That's the first thing. When we do that, or when we become so habituated to that practice that the mind naturally doesn't wander beyond certain boundaries that we establish for it, then we can begin to develop other aspects of our human potential, such as our concentration, which you've mentioned. And when concentration is prolonged and very narrowly focused, then that's called dhyan. And the power of dhyan is very great. Srila Prabhupada had such concentrated focus on his spiritual master's instructions and anything that would facilitate his following those instructions that, you know, he did what he did, which I think we all know. At least we should, if we don't. If you've not read Srila Prabhupada Lilamrita or Shruta Kirti's books, What is the Difficulty, or Hari Shori's Prabhu's Transcendental Diary, these kinds of resources, then you definitely should make that a priority. Because we get some insights by hearing from devotees who are eyewitnesses just what Srila Prabhupada was able to do. And it's the result of his focus on the holy name of Krishna and on the order of his spiritual master. In particular, he was very much inspired by the commentary of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur on Vyavasayatmika Buddhi Ityadi, that verse. Fixed intelligence, as Krishna describes in Bhagavad Gita. It's very hard to have that unless we're generally situated in piety. And that's why Srila Prabhupada also was advocating that process in the form of Varnashram Dharma. People have a very static conception of Varnashram Dharma. I would emphasize the Dharma aspect first and the Varnashram aspect secondarily, because we don't have a very clear concept of Dharma in most cases. But to be Dharmatma, as Krishna uses the term in Bhagavad Gita, is to be Purniatma, to be pious in temperament. And in chapter 7 he's mentioned this also, that when we are fixed in piety and the discipline of piety, then we develop adhikar. We get greater adhikar for even sense gratification, what to speak of knowledge or discrimination or focus or these other virtues that you're interested in. So the first thing is discipline. That's a binary process, as I said. You know, it's the mind is doing only two things. It's accepting something or it's rejecting something. So we beat the mind. We fix the mind somehow on the holy name, which is the express lane process. Even if you can't follow principles of Dharma or Sankhya or these other projects that are given in the Vedic literatures, then we can always do that, and it's actually more potent anyway, but it will be hard because we're dealing with wet wood, and you can't really ignite wet wood. It makes it harder. I don't know if I'm answering your question or not, but those are a few things to think about. Is that okay? Yeah. Anything else? Speak closer into the mic. Well, that's an interesting question. Did everybody hear his question? If we focus on the Gayatri Mantra, I mean, if our focus on the Gayatri Mantra is how we can help the entire world become Krishna consciousness, will that help? Is that what you're asking? Yeah. And the Maha Mantra, okay. Well, in a sense, I think so. One thing that I know that Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, in particular about the Gopal Gayatri and the Kamadev Gayatri, these are two of the Gayatri mantras that we chant. We chant seven of them. He says that whatever you're seeing or whatever you're meditating on when you chant these mantras, that's what you're going to get. And we've heard the similar things about the Maha Mantra also, that whatever your focus is, I mean, you may be watering weeds if you're meditating on material things while you're chanting the mantra. So that's one thing. I mean, sometimes also people ask the question, should I look at a picture of Krishna while I'm chanting, to make sure that my mind is on Krishna? Srila Prabhupada, I know, said that what we have to do is focus on the sound. So maybe it's better to shut your eyes. Bhaktivinoda Thakur at one point even says, you put a blanket over your head and turn off the lights if need be. But somehow just get your mind focused on the sound vibration of the mantra. That's what I would say. If your motivation is to help the world become Krishna conscious, then of course that's very good. I think, at least for myself, I can't speak for great souls like you, but for myself, the motivation is to become Krishna conscious, because you can't give what you don't have. We have to have Krishna consciousness before we can really give it. And to the extent that we have Krishna consciousness, to that extent we can help the rest of the world as well. They're not really different things, but they are different approaches. One of them is, you know, kind of like intake, and the other one is output, maybe we can say. And they have to go on the same way, by chanting very attentively. Is that okay? Anything else, Eric? That's a good answer. That's also consonant with certain things that the Goswamis have written. He says that when we are concentratedly absorbing Krishna consciousness deep within our hearts, then it should reach a point of, I don't want to say saturation, but maybe critical mass, at which point, you know, it naturally radiates in all that we say and do. I think that's a very good point. Krishna consciousness is less about what we're doing and more about what we are being. It's more about what we are and you know, therefore about what we do as well. What we do should reflect what we are, but the principal concern is what we are. Because we have so many false concepts of what we are. So that will change with the input. But it generally takes time. But we can speed it up as much as possible by increasing our focus. But focus itself, as we mentioned already, it's a product of our previous endeavors. If our sanskars are completely sick, then, you know, we're not going to be able to focus very well. On the other hand, if our sanskars are very pious and pure, then our focus will also increase. All of our assets increase with the purification of our heart. Karmic assets, jnana assets, and devotional assets. If we, you know, we've all been given some mercy already. If we take that mercy and invest our piety in that mercy, then we get greater results. It's like Prabhupada said, there's a one in front of so many zeros. So many zeros are useless, but once you get mercy, then that's number one. But if you've got so many zeros, and then you've put a number one in front of it, then you're better off with somebody who's only got one zero. Correct? This is what we're talking about. So material assets become spiritualized in Krishna consciousness. That's gross and subtle assets. Okay, I think we should stop here. It's getting late. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.